All right, you're listening to NYC Radio Live. This is a real, this is really in some street reporting here. I'm with Olivier Conan here outside of Barbez, one of our premier venues here. And this episode, like many others, is brought to us with a little help from the Rubin Museum of Art, who bring us this words of wisdom from Yogi Berra: if there's a fork in the road, take it. So their wisdom series is underway this fall. All right. So thanks for taking the time, Olivier.
Thanks for the wisdom. I really
yeah,
like the
I know.
Fork
that's really helpful.
It's a good one.
That's really helpful. All right. You've been running Barbez for how long?
14 years.
14 years. And to me, it's so central.
As
central as, say, sanitation.
Let's try that again. To you.
To me, it's so central to, like, not only world music, but also just music in New York. Like, this is an essential place, you know. If a bomb dropped on 6th Street at 9th, it would be a major 6th Avenue 9th. It would be major loss.
I have a lot of respect for you, so I'll take your word for that.
did it happen right at the hit? I guess you yourself started as a musician first, and then.
Yeah, I mean, no, I didn't start as a musician first. I became a musician kind of by accident to begin with. Mostly started playing in my 20s. Played in a lot of bands around New York. But yes, I was playing before I opened Barbez, which I opened with my partner, Vincent. But the fact that I did play music, and I'd been playing music around town and many different clubs, I think I had a pretty good grasp on what to expect from a club owner. And how to treat people, how to not treat people a certain
right.
way so they come back. So that probably helped. Also worked at a major music venue for many years. I worked at Town Hall.
All right.
And that's I got to learn a lot of things about, you know, about music production in general. Met a lot of people there.
Right.
So that was pretty good training.
Okay, and then right at the hit, I mean, now it's famous as like a listening room. So even though it's super small and intimate, just about everybody loves to play here, even when they can get bigger shows. Was this always the case, and were you always getting the type of acts you liked right at the hit, or did that come a little bit later?
Yeah, we got very lucky. We had great people playing very, very soon after opening up. There were a lot of great musicians in the neighborhood, people that I knew, not from the neighborhood necessarily, and they started playing there, and we got an audience fairly quickly. We got press within a year, so yeah, it was pretty magical the way it happened.
And then you were kind of a band leader, I don't know at the timeline, but that band, that was a big touring. Big. That was a big project, right?
I've had a couple of bands that played Barbez on a regular basis. A band that I had with my wife called Las Rubias del Norte, which played the very first day we opened, and that was doing really well for a while. I had another band that did all French songs that I wrote called Baby Eiffel. Mm-hmm. That was also, like, the first couple of years was one of the things I was doing there. And then another band that I started a few years after Barbez opened called Chicha Libre, which ended up being like a major project for me. My partner Vincent played in it too, and we toured a lot and had a regular weekly gig at Barbez when we were here. So that was also a big part of running Barbez. It's not just booking bands, he was also playing here and being, you know, one of the talent that gets booked.
Right, that's pretty except awesome. That, is there a track from there that maybe we could share with our audience that you have in mind, maybe? Or
we could play maybe a track from the second album, Cannibalismo, which is called L'Âge d'Or, only because it's not typical. It's a French song played chicha style.
All right, let's check it out.
In Brooklyn, you know.
Cool.
souviens-tu du bruit des fusils dans la plaine? Le soleil se rouillait vers la mer et le tonnerre courait sous terre. C'était l'âge d'or.
How did you do that? What chicha is that? What's the deal? Is that the genre? Chicha.
Chicha is a genre of music from Peru. It's essentially cumbia played in Peru with the influences from the highland, huaynos, Andean music, with Colombian cumbia, with a lot of Afro-Cuban guaracha and surf rock.
Ah.
And psychedelic rock also, plus a lot of other things. I mean, there's like classical music thrown in, and there's a lot of Brazilian rhythms also. So it's a complete crazy mix of different kinds of music, and the result has a very strong identity.
Right. I saw that you guys did a sati piece. And so that's typical, actually. That wasn't just a quirky thing that you guys were doing.
I mean, it was quirky in a way, but yes, I mean, there were a bunch of classical tracks done cumbia style in Peru, the most famous one being by a band called Los Destellos, doing a song called Para Elisa, which is Fury Elise. But I also did like a Saint-Preux tune and Saint-Preux.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
I mean,
that's a composer?
Yeah, a lot of those guitar players in Peru had a training in classical music, even though it was like very much working class music, but the musicians were pretty well trained, especially the guitar players. A lot of them knew how to play some Bach.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing when you look at even Brazilian choro, that was a working class music that fire departments would have their own choro band, and yet now to us, even trained musicians, it's
hard music to play. I mean, you cannot just it's not punk,
right?
Not that there's anything wrong with punk, it's just a very completely different attitude towards music,
for sure. And then somehow this developed into your own label that came.
I started the label a couple of years after I opened the Barbes. The Chicha thing was not the first thing on the label. My other band, La Trovia del Norte, actually was, I think, the first release. I released records by a band called Hasmat Mudin, which ended up doing really, really well in Europe, still doing well. And then Slavic Soul Party, I think.
Right.
So a lot of things that were associated with Barbes. And then I went to Peru in 2004 and heard Chicha for the first time and got got kind of obsessed mm-hmm. and sort of taken over my life for a while. But I did a compilation of their music called The Roots of Chicha, which I ended up releasing myself. I thought I was going to try to get on a label that mm-hmm. was a little more professional, and that did not end up happening, so I did it myself. And it came out 10 years ago.
Right. So, okay. So that's pretty amazing that, I mean, Slavic Soul Party, a lot of these groups have resonated way, way beyond this modestly sized room that you got here. That's pretty, it's pretty amazing. I guess maybe that's how it works in New York. Maybe. I don't know.
Also, I mean, if you give, you know, talented musicians a chance to play on a regular basis for years, they get to develop into something, you know, pretty singular, original.
Right. That's something I kind of want to commend you on, because I know that, I mean, actually the theme song of this, the podcast version of this radio show, is a track from the Mandingo Ambassadors, and as we speak, Mamadé Koyate is playing in the room with Mama Jabate. But the fact that that you've given that space for these guys to play for years, I mean, that's really rare.
And I think it's super important. I mean, you know, having a place where you can try things without the pressure of being a one-off gig. Mm-hmm. Also, trying to have longer sets than most, like rock clubs are terrible. You know, you get a 40-minute slot and that's it. You don't have time to do anything in 40 minutes. I mean, you do, but it's kind of difficult.
Right.
So that's why I like to have much longer sets. We have either 90 minutes or 2 hour slots for most of the musicians who play here, and that gives you time to try new tunes, to you know, to expand the form a little more, etc.
Right. So, is there something from your label that would be cool to share at this time?
Everything.
Okay. Well, let's start with one thing, and then.
The last record that I released, uh-huh. which is by a band called Miramar. I think you're familiar with them.
Very familiar.
There's a track on it that I love called Sinti.
Okay.
Which is their own track. But it's part of an album that is a tribute to a Puerto Rican composer called Silvia Rexach, who's also a wonderful composer herself.
Right. Okay, let's check it out.
Bien lo sé yo. sans commencer.
Bad at being like fake genuine.
That's such a liar.
Yeah. No, well, I've heard the whole Miramar album. Yeah. I've heard the whole Miramar album. Yeah. Honestly, folks, we don't have access to listen to tracks now.
But you do.
I do, and yes, and you listeners can find it.
You're the virtual person who's not here quite
right,
yet,
yeah.
But will be.
We're in your earbuds. Isn't that strange? So the main reason I wanted to rush to get this online. I mean, one thing that's been great and I really appreciate is you've let me record a few great artists. In fact, Mamadé said they'd be cool if we do a little recording. But we had my Georgian, yeah, Lucia Sanadze, my Georgian friend, Samir Langis. Those guys are going to let me record tonight. They've been on the radio show a lot. That's Inov Ganawa, and if there was a music to hear right now, I think Ganawa Sufi trance music is it.
Yeah, they're phenomenal and phenomenally important at times
yes.
like these. Both because of the trance aspect and because it's music from the from an Islamic tradition.
Yeah, and you know what was crazy? I was hanging out with those guys a private party. Now I remember the name. Amino Belyemini is one of the singers, and he's the pianist in the group Dawn of Midi. And his brother, Hatim Belyemini, is another force who does a lot of fascinating production and DJing and heavy cat. And at his party, Inov Ganawa and the Malim were there, and they played a whole bunch of music, and it happened to be all related to Jewish themes because it was a Jewish holiday, so he busted out and they were singing about the Talmud. They were every single song was about Judaism. So there's this history that they were tapping into of a very tolerant time, I guess in Morocco, and I'm guessing several hundred years ago, perhaps before the Inquisition or something like that. I didn't get the dates, but that was so moving and mind-blowing to me. But the main reason I was rushing to get this online is that I don't know if you've done this before, but you're organizing some kind of open discussion here on Sunday.
Yeah, we're recording this a week and a half after the results of the presidential election. I think a lot of us are pretty devastated, confused, and I mean, angry is not even the word. I mean, I'm kind of mad at myself and at my circles of friends and social circles and the Democratic Party and all the people who've been so complacent and exchanging ideas and memes on Facebook to their own avatars. We stopped looking at the world, I think, in many ways. And that's one of the reasons that we're in this mess, and one of the reasons we have a strange man as president with very little knowledge of the world. I don't know, I'm very, very, very disturbed, like at a personal level.
Right.
So, yeah, we're organizing a gathering. Hey, there's music here.
and it's smooth as can be.
That's kind of great, actually. But yeah, organizing a gathering just to start having ideas about how we're going to live the next few years, what it is that we can do differently. Is there an other side? Is there such a thing? People that we can reach out to, people that we should be talking to? Because, you know, human experience is pretty narrow if you think about it. It's got to be a way to talk to most people, etc.
Yeah, I've been around a lot of conversations, and one thing that came out of the group that I work with a lot, Brooklyn Raga Massive, was an intention to get out there more, to connect, like, let's do an Appalachian project and go to the Appalachians and have these, virtuosic and open-minded Islamic and Hindu musicians make connections, because I'm pretty sure that a big issue was exactly what you're talking about, that everybody was in their own social media bubble.
And there's such a feedback element in, especially on Facebook. Whenever you start peeping onto other people's pages, like super conservative people or even alt-right people, they start saying horrible, horrible things, which I do not believe they would be saying in person in a mixed group of people. Mm. And there's something to be said with the almost check and balance quality of real life.
Yeah, that's one of the sadder things that happened, is that the discourse, there were certain things that were off the table. It would be the end of your political career, it would be the end of your financial career if you spoke these things. And now they've been spoken, and they actually got someone elected. So that's frightening,
yeah,
and that's scary.
Is definitely frightening. And also incomprehensible to me. I don't understand. I don't get it.
Yeah.
At the same time, I thought Trump was going to get elected, so it was less of a shock to me than it was to some people. But still a shock.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also feeling, though, that this Facebook bubble that we speak of, these people, when we say, how could you, it's because we're not sharing the same accepted reality at all. We hear Trump talking about grabbing women's pussies, and we think, how could you? But maybe in someone else's bubble of information, that came and went, and all they were hearing about was all of Hillary Clinton's corruptions, and they say, how could you? They're not thinking it. That's not something they're being hammered over the head with, while it's something we're being hammered over the head with. So there might be, that might be what's going on.
I mean, I have a similar kind of idea to what you were saying about having Raga Massive on the road, essentially.
Yeah.
Like a friend of mine has a podcast called Us and Them, mm-hmm. which is it's a pretty interesting podcast. It's about, he's from West Virginia, and it's about talking about the cultural divide, essentially, that is pretty great. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to go on the road with him in West Virginia, which is the state that has voted the most for Trump, 68%, mm-hmm. I think. And just be a liberal Frenchman from New York talking to you.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I think that one, I hope, that one might actually be pleasantly surprised on a person-to-person level.
I believe that.
Because, if you look historically at colonialism, it was always a divide and conquer. It was always a divide and conquer trick, and there's been quotes of British guys saying, oh, it's easy to start a riot. All you do is take a cow and slaughter it and throw it into a Hindu temple, and then they go and kill all the Muslims. So it's an intentional device, and I feel that if you look at United States as a third world country and you say, oh, we're being colonized by higher ups, then whenever we fall into the trap of the divide and conquer and we get angry at those poor southern uneducated white people or whoever we're angry at, we're being the same suckers who are having race, religious riots in India. Because they're not the enemy, and the Mexicans aren't the enemy, maybe there isn't an actual enemy, but there is a 1% that I think both sides could probably agree that we want clean water. I think both sides could agree with that. I think.
Yeah, I mean, it probably runs a little deeper than just that. I mean, we could think of it as we may be the colonizers in many ways. I mean,
yeah.
the whole idea that there's a cultural elite is not completely false. I mean, mm-hmm. people with our values, with my values often, are the ones writing the books, the textbooks, the curriculum, often working on whatever... TV.
Releasing the albums.
Releasing the albums. Nobody buys them, though. And so, yeah, maybe we are colonizing a part of the world ourselves. And at least we're perceived as such. And
right.
we could maybe apply the colonial discourse to, well, you know, us urban people from California and, yeah. And New York. And
well, neither of us are Native Americans, so
that's right.
I guess it's fair to say that you know, yeah, we're part of a colonial system, and if we're eating, then we're thriving more than some others.
Even though I came here as an adult, well, I guess I came to the capital of the empire in many ways, the way people did in Rome.
Yeah.
I just want to move to the country. Not talk to anybody.
Head
books,
for the hills. So. You know,
I'm just so ready.
One thing that's amazing is that heading for the hills used to be something associated with crazy people. But now, after Hurricane Sandy, it's actually like he's got a good head on his shoulders.
Right.
Buy hilltop property.
I'm saying that from the top of the slope.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it'll be interesting, and I hope that some people who hear this in time will come and join the discussion. And obviously, it won't all get figured out, but...
Well, the idea is to start a discussion, lay out some ideas, and most importantly, lay out some practical ideas of how to participate in the process, whether the process be a cultural process, but more importantly, be a political one. I mean, we've been living in like a post-political world where we don't take the political process that seriously. We only think of specific issues that have to be defended, but there's no underlying ideological discourse to anything that we do. There is one with conservatives, with religious people, but like us, whatever we are, mm-hmm. You know, left-leaning liberals. Former communists.
Careful, they're listening.
We don't have an ideology. I mean, I don't have one, and right. We thought it was a good thing not to have an ideology. It was a strength, and maybe it actually is a weakness.
That's a tricky one. I mean,
I know you can't fanaticize people without an ideology, which is good because fanaticizing people is not a good thing.
Right.
But it's also bad because that's the only way you can convince people that they have to fight for a cause.
Yeah, I mean, someone has said, you know, that this is the universal problem in terms of left and so-called left and so-called right, is that the right wing, which is like a conservative, they by nature are willing to obey authority and fall into line. So when the people above deliver talking points, everybody falls into line, and they may even, like, literally, verbatim, repeat the talking points. Liberal people all have their own opinions. So they're proud of that. But for that reason, the message gets so dispersed, and it's also a nuanced thing. You know, it's like the difference between lock them up is very easy to understand. Well, you have to understand that they had a different upbringing from us, and they didn't have this. That's much harder to understand, you know. So lock them up wins. Yeah.
That's
sometimes.
Right. Bernie Sanders did well because he did use very simple images, you know, against the billionaires, etc. Which I did find a little bit irritating at points.
Yeah,
but it was probably a powerful message, and one that if we'd gone behind. There would have been a different outcome in the election, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know anything.
Okay, well, this is my last question because I don't know. This is not my strong point either. But I've been super, super motivated since this election, and I've gone out every single night And I feel that when it's relevant, the music has been, there's been a new seriousness to the music, to the audience. I think we're going to hear it tonight for sure. Have you felt anything different? Have you seen that?
Yes, in many ways, people playing. A lot of people feel like, oh, I don't want to play. It's not what we should be doing now. And after playing a while, playing, feel like they're more deeply engaged in the music. It feels more important, more relevant, even though it's an aesthetic statement and not a political or philosophical one. So, yeah.
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 All right. Well, thanks for your time. Hopefully we can continue these dialogues. I appreciate you sharing with our audience all this amazing music. And I hope more folks, if we can squeeze them in, will come. This will motivate them to come to 9th Street and 6th Avenue in Barbès. It's always good. That's the other thing. I come here without knowing who's playing. And that's special, man. That's Bill Graham level, like Fillmore East, like, you know. When people start showing up, just by reputation of the place.
We're blessed with a lot of great musicians playing here and coming back and playing often. So yeah. You should too.
All right, more to come. Peace.